smoke smells now not only of plastic and metal, but of flesh. The rebels have lost. They have lost. Another explosion rocks the corridor, and this time, the ceiling falls in, right in front of them. Leia stares at it, bewildered, but just for an instant. Then she falls upon the rubble, trying to clear it from their path. But there's too much, and it's piled too high. Han watches her, frozen. The explosions are getting closer. Then he pulls his transmitter to his mouth.
Transport, this is Solo. I've got the princess with me. I can't get to you. I'll get her out on the Falcon.
Leia turns from the rubble. That bucket of bolts can't get past the blockade.
That's your ride, princess.
Han calls back over his shoulder as he starts down the hall away from the rubble. C-3PO tottering behind.
It's up to you.
Leia hesitates. She looks down the blocked corridor. She glances after Solo.
We'll never survive,
she shouts. And he shouts back.
At least we'll never survive together.
She frowns, hesitates, and runs after him. The once peaceful snowplain is now streaked and stained with blood and oil, shrapnel and space junk. The air, once whistling only with the wind, now whistles with laser fire and crashing ships. You bank your speeder for another run at a snowwalker. Rogue Two, are you all right?
I'm with you, Rogue Leader.
Your harpoon this time. I'll cover you with my manual blasters.
Like hunting shar whales on Uthora. I'm coming home.
The pilot of Rogue Two crows. You laugh. Okay, don't get too far out ahead of me now. But Rogue Two isn't listening. Taken by adrenaline and fear, he's already shot out onto the icy expanse between you and the walker.
Slow down,
you tell him.
Rogue Two coming home!
And then he explodes. From across his bow, a bright red blast of laser hits his speeder directly in its propulsion system. You watch in horror. And in that moment, as you stare at that brave pilot with a stupid sense of humor smoldering in the wreckage of his speeder, his gunner desperately trying to pry himself out of the back, that's when you're hit. The control panel looks like a thunderstorm. Your dials are spinning. Readouts have become tiny electric light shows. You're trying to hold the ship up, but gravity is fighting a battle with your speeder. And suddenly, it's winning. The G-force is strong and stronger, and you're pulling up. But that's not doing a thing. Your head is being flattened into your seat. You lock your jaw and close your eyes. The ship slams into the ice. You cannot breathe. Do you know the feeling? When you get the wind knocked out of you, you gasp at the air, but it will not enter your mouth. You arch your back, desperate, empty, literally breathless, screaming in silence for the breath that just moments ago you never had to think about. And then the wind comes rushing back into your lungs, and you thank the Force, or whatever you believe in, and you breathe. You breathe just as the enormous steel foot of a snowwalker appears over your tiny snow speeder. You gaze up at it, motionless. The steel foot descends. You will be crushed. You will be crushed, and you will die. And then the cockpit is open, and you are over the metal gunwale, and you are rolling, rolling, rolling. A child's game turns suddenly serious, rolling across the icy snow. The great foot crashes down upon the speeder, and the snowwalker continues its inexorable march toward the rebel base. You spring to your feet. You don't know where you get the energy. It courses through you, though, like your newly regained breath. You start to run. At full speed, you can just keep pace with the war machine. You look over the ruined field of snow. The sun hanging bright and distant in the empty blue sky. The rebels in the trench are barely firing anymore. They must be retreating, back to the transports. It's over. Their only hope now is to get out before the power generator is destroyed.
and the shields go down. And the great armada of Star Destroyers hovering just out of orbit pulverizes the base with their cannons, obliterating it and everyone inside. The only question now is how soon those generators will be blown. The sooner they are, the more rebels will die. Still running, you look up at the steel underbelly moving above you. Swinging from your belt is a harpoon gun. For Elephoth hunting, you think. Ridiculous to carry it into battle, but it's standard rebel equipment. Lucky for you. You aim it upward and let it fire. It catches on a mechanism on the Snowwalker's underbelly, its steel cable trailing back to your hand. Running sideways now, you fasten the cable to your belt and hit retract on the gun. Suddenly, you are careening upward through the air, toward the belly of the walker. Your arms and legs dangle, your belt is trying to tear itself from your body, and the wind is so cold on your neck that your teeth hurt. You reach for your lightsaber. The belly approaches. It arrives. You are dangling like a spider. A deadly spider. With a single swing, you hew the hinges from the escape hatch in the belly of the steel beast. The door goes spinning down into the snow. In a pouch hanging from the back of your belt is a grenade. You don't like grenades. If you want to commit the dire and irreparable act of taking a life, you think, you ought to at least look the person in the face before you do it. That is why Jedi prefer lightsabers. Also, it is harder to kill someone accidentally with a lightsaber. Grenades, like guns, have a disturbing tendency to take the life of the wrong person. But you're not a Jedi Knight. Not yet. You're just a kid with a lightsaber. Maybe you would be a Jedi already, if Darth Vader hadn't killed old Ben. Rage grabs your shoulders and chest, making them tight and hot. You wonder if Vader is out on one of those Imperial Star Destroyers, waiting to kill you too. Old Ben. What had he said while you lay unconscious in the snow? Dagobah? Yoda? Master Yoda? The Snowwalker fires a blast right at the satellite dish perched on the generator. It bursts into flames. Focus, you tell yourself. You start the detonation sequence on the grenade and hurl it through the hatch. Then you release the cable from your belt. As you hurtle snowward, you suddenly wonder if the walker will crash down on you when it explodes. Lesson Kappa. Relax. People are shooting at you. Get someone to help you. You are going to stand on one foot or balance that book on your head, and someone is going to very gently throw things at you. These things should be soft. I recommend balled up socks or crumpled pieces of paper. They should be thrown gently. You are going to bat them away with your hands without losing balance. Get yourself set. Stand on one foot or put the book on your head. Do 1 second of instantaneous meditation. Close your eyes. Smile. Breathe in and out. Open your eyes. Then have your assistant begin to gently toss objects at you. See if you can stay balanced and still defend yourself. Get going, young one. Let's see what you've got. Chapter 11. An enormous opera-singing dog yodels soulfully beside the Millennium Falcon. No, wait. That is Chewbacca. Never mind. Chewbacca howls mournfully. His small eyes dart from the Millennium Falcon to the hangar doors. They will remain open another few minutes, at most. After that, the Falcon will not fly. No matter if the walking barbershop floor succeeded in fixing the lifters or not. He cries again. Not that the Wookiee minds dying. Not really. Wookiees are nothing if not valiant. But they are also fiercely loyal. Chewbacca is not worried for himself. He's worried for Han and for Leia. Just then, they come sprinting around a corner.
That is Chewbacca howling joyfully, in case you couldn't tell the difference. Han shouts,
"Start her up, Chewie! Start her up!"
Chewie leads the way up the gangplank, followed by Han and Leia. C-3PO totters into view around a distant corner.
Oh, wait! Wait for me!
He should hurry. They will absolutely not wait for him.
Well, maybe Leia would.
In the cockpit, Han throws switches all over the place. Chewbacca studies the reading skeptically. Han glances at his first mate, growls in the negative. Leia leans over Han's shoulder. Would it help if I got out and pushed?
It might.
Sir, might I suggest?
Han raises a single eyebrow at the droid.
Never mind.
C-3PO concludes sheepishly. The captain leaps from his seat. He rushes from control panel to mechanical bank back to control panel. Leia puts her hands on her hips. This jalopy will never get past the blockade.
Oh, she's got some surprises left in her, sweetheart.
Don't call me that.
I was talking to the ship.
Outside the Falcon, a power gasket explodes. Chewbacca roars, not joyfully.
I'm trying! Han shouts. I'm trying!
Suddenly, in the space of the hangar door, stormtroopers appear.
Now it's a party!
Leia shouts. One of the stormtrooper mounts a rocket launcher on his shoulder. As Han fiddles with some wiring under the cockpit's main dash, Leia slides into the captain's seat and fires at the stormtroopers. They are sent hurtling through the air in 6 different directions. Then she gets out of the seat. Han looks up at her for a moment, not sure if she's moved or not, and then goes back to furiously fiddling with wires.
Now!
He shouts at Chewbacca. The Wookiee pulls back on a thruster, and the Falcon roars to life!
Woohoo!
Han cries, leaping into the captain's chair.
One day, Leia says, you're going to be wrong. I just hope I'm there to see it.
Han Solo flashes her a smile. The hangar doors begin to close.
Punch it!
Han shouts. Chewbacca throws a switch, and the Millennium Falcon roars out of the Rebel base, up through the snowy sky of Hoth, and into the blackness of space. You hit the snow. It explodes around you. The Snowwalker lumbers ahead 3, 4, 5 steps. You are breathing hard, watching it go. The Rebel troops have fled the trench. The fight is over. The Snowwalker fires at the generators. One catches fire. Then, overhead, you see it. Han's rickety old ship, still supposedly the fastest in the galaxy, shoots out of the south hangar and climbs up through the atmosphere. You smile. At least Han got out. Hopefully the princess, too. Yes, she's in that ship. You can tell. And then, an explosion presses you into the ground. A wave of heat courses over your body. You are lying on your back, the snow rapidly melting around you, fire licking your chest. Then it subsides. You raise the blackened visor of your helmet. The Snowwalker is dangling from its own legs, a blackened husk. You get up and run. On a remote part of the ice field, far away from the battle and the now ruined Rebel base, you trudge through the snow. A short distance farther sits your X-Wing, a spaceship outfitted for one pilot and one droid. R2 is in his place. He's the one who piloted it out here to the muster site to wait for you. The last of the other pilots are taking off, leaving a strange sight. A spaceship, small and lonesome, sitting on the edge of a frozen wilderness. The sounds of battle seem very distant out here. You hoist yourself into the cockpit. You grin. Hi, R2. Everything okay? Oh, that's sweet. I'm fine. I just hope everyone else is. You punch some numbers into the X-Wing's navigation system. R2 objects. I know. We're not meeting them at the rendezvous point. No, we're going somewhere else. It's called Dagobah.
I'd never heard of it either. But there's someone there I need to meet. He's called Yoda. You initiate the engine. Well, some people might say that R2-D2 is a stupid name too, you retort. It's just something I have to do, R2. Just something I have to do. Strange Planets, Part 1. Chapter 12. Your X-Wing hovers over an emerald planet. It is a shimmering green orb, with large patches of blue, indicating perhaps great inland lakes. Clouds and mist swirl over the planet's surface, like steam rising from a cauldron. I'm not picking up any cities or technology, R2. You say, massive life-form readings, though. There's something alive down there. A lot of somethings, actually. No, I'm not going to change my mind. I'm going to find this Yoda. R2, watch your language. The ship descends through the atmosphere, submerging itself deeper and deeper into the swirling mist and cloud. You can't see a thing. An alarm sounds in the cockpit. R2 beeps at you. I know, you shout. Your eyes frantically scan the scopes and meters. They're all dead. You get the strangest notion in your head. It's as if you're descending into some kind of dream. A place where technology doesn't work. Where science and logic fail. You try to shake the thought away, and then the ship shakes you back. Hard. You're being pushed back into your seat. Cracking and snapping echo through the cockpit. But the mist is so thick and deep, you can't tell if it's the ship breaking or whatever's outside. The X-Wing is falling, plunging deeper and deeper into the dream world. Your neck snaps forward as the ship jerks to a stop. Your head is pounding. Woozily, you try to make out the readings from the X-Wing. There are no readings. The ship is no longer functioning at all. Wherever you've just landed, you're not leaving anytime soon. You are now standing on the very threshold of your training. You have come to a place halfway between waking and dreaming, between the physical and the mystical. Welcome to Dagobah. Lesson Lambda. Strange places. New worlds. I want you to do something dangerous. Not too dangerous. Don't die on me, kid. But something outside your comfort zone. Something that makes your skin tingle. Just a little bit. Think of a place that you haven't gone before. It can be nearby. Maybe it's the janitor's closet in your school. Maybe it's the basement of your public library. Look around. It has one. Maybe it's your own attic. At night, when everyone's sleeping. Someplace that's a little strange, a little creepy. Next chance you get, go there. Alone. Don't tell anyone what you're doing. Slip into that strange place. Close the door behind you. Don't let it lock. Starving to death counts as dying on me. And sit there. Maybe you're in darkness. Maybe you're not. Explore the place with your mind, with your hands. Be alone there. Do you feel scared? Good. You should be. Chapter 13. You are standing on the hull of your X-Wing. It is half submerged in swamp. You can barely see. The air is dark and thick, and mists drift by, enveloping you in a warm cocoon of dew. You are afraid. There is life on this planet. The place teems with it. Some of it is poisonous. Some of it is sharp-toothed.
Some of it is slow and strong and hungry. And you can't see any of it. There's a splash.
What's that?
You whisper.
R2?
No response.
R2!
Just the burbling, steaming silence of the darkness answers your call.
R2!
You rush to the side of your ship. Suddenly, the X-Wing lurches beneath you. You stick out your arms, sway, and steady yourself. R2 is gone. Ripples radiate out into the swamp. Frantically, you scan the morass, squinting into the murky gloom.
R2? R2-D2!
If there are hungry creatures about, they know you are here now. If the crashing of the ship hadn't told them, your screaming has. They know exactly where you are. Unfortunately, you don't know where they are. Suddenly, R2's periscope appears above the surface of the swamp. You sigh.
Get to land, you call. No telling what's in that swamp with you.
You stop speaking. The black back of a large creature breaches the surface of the swamp, just behind R2-D2. Then it dives. Gone. You stare, as decisive as a weather vane in a cyclone. R2's periscope is making its slow way to the nearest bank. Surely the creature is not interested in eating a hunk of circuits and metal. This is what you tell yourself, but your hands are sweating. R2 has reached the bank. His rounded dome of a head emerges from the water, followed by his cylindrical body. You begin to exhale, which is when the creature takes him.
R2!
You scream. He's gone, sucked back into the swamp. The water, already turbid, churns with the struggle.
R2! Fight him! Come on, R2!
Forget the other predators lurking nearby. You'll scream for R2. He might be a droid, but he's your friend. You'd fire your blaster, but you'd be just as likely to hit the little droid. And your lightsaber won't reach. Not nearly. So you just shout, "Fight him!" The water falls still. You stare. A bead of sweat drips from your nose.
R2,
you murmur.
And then, R2-D2 is flying up out of the swamp, screaming his shrill, whistling scream. He crashes into the trees, some 30 yards from the bank.
You bound over the X-Wing's hull and leap to safe ground. You dash to him. He's lying on his back, tangled in branches and vines and roots, covered with swamp mess. You try to brush him off. Ugh, he smells disgusting. But you can't help smiling.
Good thing you taste so bad, you tell him.
His response is not polite. You're sitting amid boxes on the bank of the swamp. You've plugged R2 into his power regenerator. You've rescued your pre-made shelter from the X-Wing and placed most of the components where they should go. And you've opened your rations box. You gnaw on a protein stick, watch your ship sink slowly into the bog, and think about how useless, how indecisive you were when R2 was getting eaten by that swamp thing. You feel sick. Then you think of Leia and Han and Chewie and even C-3PO and that flying hunk of bolts. Last you saw them, they were heading straight toward an Imperial armada. You didn't help them, just like you didn't help R2. You flew off to this planet to find some name from some hallucination you had. Yoda? There's no Yoda. You pick up a stick and start breaking it.
What are we doing here, R2?
Maybe I should have listened to you. Ben told me Master Yoda was here. You stare around at the overgrown fen. The whole place smells of rot.
What Jedi Master would live here? There's not even a spaceport.
Spaceport? What is spaceport?
You leap to your feet and spin at the same time, hands raised in self-defense. Half a meter from you sits one of the strangest creatures you have ever seen. He's bluish green with long ears and bulging eyes. Your hand creeps slowly toward your lightsaber. "Who are you?" you demand.
"I ask question first."
The creature laughs. His voice is raspy and high, as if a frog had learned to talk. Maybe he is some kind of frog. Then you think, no, his ears are too big. Before you've registered it, he is rummaging through your food.
"Food this is,"
he croaks.
"Hungry I am."
"Get out of there, that's mine."
"What is yours?"
he asks, chewing on one of your dehydrated veggie bars and then throwing it away. "That is."
"What is mine?"
he continues, as if you'd interrupted him.
"Yours and mine is not. There only is."
"What? Stop talking nonsense. Get out of here." R2-D2, who's been beeping madly since this little gnome showed up, is reaching his long, retractable arm out to grab a protein stick that the creature has begun to nibble on. He gets hold of it. The creature refuses to let go. They start a tug of war over the protein stick. "Where am I?" you mutter, staring at the surreal scene. The creature has picked up a gnarled walking stick and is hitting R2-D2 over the head with it as he desperately grips the protein stick with his free hand. "Oh, just let him have it, R2. R2 lets go and goes tumbling backward. The creature sits down and, with a satisfied grin, takes a bite of the protein stick. Suddenly, he contorts his strange face into an even stranger one and throws the stick over his shoulder.
"How get so big do you, eating such bad food?"
"It's not meant for little swamp frogs," you reply. "It's meant for humans." The creature peers up at you.
"What are you doing here, I am wondering?"
You sigh. "I'm looking for a great warrior."
"Great warrior, you say? War makes not one great."
You shake your head. You can barely make sense of what he's saying. "Fine, I'm looking for a great Jedi Master, then."
"A Jedi Master? Yoda, you want?"
You perk up. "You know him?"
"Know him, I do. Take him to you, I can. But first, eat we must. Come!"
The little creature picks up the gnarled stick he's been hitting R2 with and uses it as a cane. Not that he needs one. He bounds over roots twice his height with apparently little effort. You struggle behind him, sweat dripping down your hair and into your eyes, the rich, fetid smell of the swamp clogging your nostrils. R2 rolls and totters behind you, sometimes. The rest of the time, you have to carry him. Your shirt is soaked, and your back is aching when the little frog creature comes to a stop. You put R2 down with a grunt. You are standing before what looks like a pile of roots and mud that someone cut a single door and window into. "This is where Yoda lives?"
"My house this is. Eat we must."
The door's so low you have to crawl through it. R2 can't even fit, so you tell him to wait outside. He peers through the single round window and mutters low beeps and whistles. You hope the creature can't understand them. You've known space pirates who wouldn't use the language R2 does. Once in the house, the creature immediately busies himself with cooking. He has a pot hung over a little fire and two small cauldrons sitting among coals, and he runs back and forth between them, throwing roots and swamp weed into them. As he cooks, the smell that wafts through the room reminds you of a garbage depot in the hot season on Tatooine. Then you sense it. Something is moving behind you. You glance back and dive to the ground. There is a very large snake. Or maybe it's not a snake. It could be a slug. A
Slake, maybe? Or a snug? Whatever it is, it gives you the creeps. You glance between the slug and the blue-green creature. He doesn't pay any attention to it. You find another seat. The little frogman bustles over the putrid meal, humming to himself, as outside R2 mumbles a stream of electronic invective so foul you're blushing. Finally, you can't take it any longer. When am I going to see Yoda? You blurt.
Later, later. Now we eat. Even Jedi Master is eating now.
The creature shoves a spoonful of root leaf stew into your mouth. It has the consistency of boiled brains, and you're about to spit it out when you stop. It doesn't taste terrible, actually. You chew and swallow.
Good? Good!
squeals the little creature. Yes, you say, surprised. Good. Can I see Yoda now?
First, says the creature, a story I tell.
What? No!
Short story. Good story. You sit. You listen. Maybe learn something you will about Yoda.
You sigh. If you learn something about the Jedi Master, maybe it's worth hearing the story. You settle yourself among the roots, coals, and steaming pots, making sure no more snakes are sharing your seat. The ceiling is low and smoky above you. The smell of boiling swamp weed suffuses the little house. The light is dim and red. The creature begins. Now, I'm going to tell you the creature's story as I've heard it, passed down through the years. I'm not going to try to replicate the creature's strange way of speaking. Besides, you wouldn't know what I was talking about. I wouldn't know what I was talking about. I'm just going to tell it. It goes like this. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there lived a poor man with his three sons. The oldest son was strong and handsome, and everyone thought he was very wonderful. He agreed with them. The second son was wise and clever, and everyone thought he, too, was very wonderful. He also agreed with them. The youngest son was quiet and thoughtful, and everyone thought he was an idiot. He did not agree with them, but nobody cared what he thought. One day, the oldest son announced that he was going out into the wide world to find his fortune. His father begged him not to go.
Stay and help your poor father on the farm. If you go, who will milk the cow and feed the chickens? We'll all starve.
But the oldest son said, my brothers can milk the cow and feed the chickens. I'm off to seek my fortune. So he packed a bag with plenty of food for his journey, and off he went. Soon, he came to a dark and frightening forest. He hesitated just beyond the forest's shadows, and then he saw, sitting by the side of the path, a toad. The toad croaked at him.
Hungry I am. Share your food with me, will you?
Yes, I realize the toad talks like the creature on Dagobah. I don't know why. That's just the way the story's always told. But the brother refused. Be gone, you filthy toad! I am off to seek my fortune. He tried to kick the toad, and then he strode forward into the dark wood. Soon, he came to a great palace. Its walls were as tall and strong as tree trunks, and banners waved from every turret. The boy wanted to know who lived in such a castle, so he asked one of the guards. The guard said it was a great king. Perhaps this king will make me the commander of his army, the oldest son exclaimed. Take me to him. So he was brought before the king. The king sat on a simple throne, and he wore no crown. When the boy saw the king, he announced, I have come to seek my fortune.
Your fortune you seek, replied the king. Then your fortune you shall have.
And with those words, the oldest brother was suddenly transformed into a fly. A long tongue shot out from the king's mouth, caught the oldest brother, and pulled him down the king's throat. The creature peers up at you, as if expecting you to speak.
"That was a good story," you say.
Really, you're just trying to be polite. You begin to stand up. "Can I see Yoda now?" The creature growls.
"Finished it, isn't? Listen, you must. Interrupt, do not. Or take you to Yoda, I won't."
You frown and force yourself to listen. The toad-like creature continues his strange tale. Back at the poor man's house, the second brother and the youngest brother work twice as hard to milk the cow and feed the chickens and care for their poor father. But after some time, the second son announced that he was going out into the wide world to find his fortune, just like his brother had. His father begged him not to go.
"Stay and help your poor father on the farm. If you go, who will milk the cow and feed the chickens? We'll starve."
But the second son said, "My brother can milk the cow and feed the chickens. I'm off to seek my fortune." So he packed a bag with plenty of food for his journey, and off he went. He followed the same road as the oldest brother, and soon he came to the same dark forest. He, like his brother, hesitated just beyond the wood's shadows. And then he saw, sitting by the side of the road, a cat.
"Hungry I am," the cat said. "Share your food with me, will you?"
Yes, the cat also talks like the creature. Again, I have no idea why. But the second brother also refused.
"Be gone, you mangy cat! I am off to seek my fortune!"
He tried to kick the cat, and then he strode forward into the dark wood. Soon he came to the same great palace, and he, too, asked to live there. The guard said he was a great king. "Perhaps the king will make me his closest advisor," the second son exclaimed. "Take me to him." So he was brought before the king. When the boy saw the king, he announced, "I have come to seek my fortune."
"Your fortune you seek?" replied the king. "Then your fortune you shall have."
And with those words, the second brother became a mouse. And the king reached out with a great paw and crushed the brother. And then the king ate him up. You are watching the little creature tell this tale. You have noticed something in him, something you had not seen before. Intensity, age, and some hidden ferocious force. You cannot put a name to it, but it scares you. Back at the poor man's house, the youngest brother worked three times as hard to milk the cow and feed the chickens and care for his poor father. But one day, the youngest brother came before his father and said, "Father, I would like to go out into the world and discover what has happened to my two brothers." His father begged him not to go.
"You are just a simple boy. You will be lost, or worse. Stay here and milk the cow and feed the chickens and take care of your poor old father."
But the youngest son said, "I have set aside 10 pails of milk for you to drink and 100 eggs for you to eat. For my brothers are gone, and there is plenty of extra food now. Eat what I have set aside for you, and I promise I will return before it is all gone." When the father saw what his youngest son had done, he agreed to let him go. So the boy packed a bag with a little bit of food and set down the same road as his brothers had. And soon, he came to the same dark forest. He, like his brothers, hesitated just beyond the wood's shadows. And then he saw, sitting by the side of the road, a chicken.
"Hungry I am," the chicken said. "Share your food with me, will you?"
So the youngest brother sat down and opened his bag and laid out all the food he had brought for his journey on the ground. And he and the chicken sat and ate.
The chicken had an enormous appetite, and soon all the food was gone. Then the brother picked up his bag and ventured into the dark forest. His stomach began to rumble, but his bag was empty. Kilometers and kilometers he went, until his legs were shaking and he was on the verge of collapsing from hunger. Just when he thought he could go no farther, he came to the castle in the wood. He asked the guard who lived there and heard it was a great king. "Perhaps the king knows where my brothers are," he said. "May I see him?" He was so weak with hunger that he had to be carried up to the king's throne room. When the boy saw the king, he fell to his knees. "Please, king, help me. I seek my brothers who ventured into this wood and disappeared. Also," he added, "I am very hungry." The king laughed, and his laugh sounded like this.
"Buck, buck, ah!"
Then the king said,
"Brothers, you shall not see. Dead they are. But this chicken feed you must take. To your father's chickens you will give it, and hungry again you shall never be."
So the boy returned home with no brothers, but with the chicken feed. His father cried with joy when he saw his youngest son return to him. Then they fed the king's chicken feed to the chickens. And forever after, when those chickens laid eggs, the eggs were made of solid gold, and the boy and his father lived happily ever after. The creature stopped speaking. He is still staring at you, but now with a satisfied expression on his strange green face. "That's it?" you ask. He nods happily. You gaze at the little creature. The magic you felt when he spoke is gone. He is a strange, lonely little swamp toad. Nothing more. Your voice is loud and angry when you say, "That had nothing to do with Yoda." You rise to your feet and hit your head hard on the ceiling. "Why are you wasting my time?" The creature looks crestfallen. He turns away from you. You sit back down and sigh. "I'll never be a Jedi at this rate." The creature murmurs,
"Why wish you become Jedi?"
You stare at the flickering fire beneath the pot of root leaf stew. "I don't know. To save the galaxy from the Empire, and to help my friends." The creature peers at you, as if he knows there is more. "And," you continue, "and, well, because of my father, I guess."
"Ah,"
says the creature, crawling up onto his little bed and sitting there. He kicks his short legs back and forth before him, like a small child.
"Powerful Jedi was your father.
You roll your eyes. "How do you know? You don't even know who I am. This is ridiculous." You stand up and hit your head on the ceiling again. You curse and turn toward the door. Just outside the window, R2 is jumping up and down, trying to get your attention. "Yeah, R2, we're leaving." You're clambering over roots and chairs and stools to get to the door. Behind you, the creature closes his great green and black eyes. His voice is no more than a murmur.
"I cannot teach him. He has no patience."
You hesitate at the door. The creature is answered by a voice, as vast and calm as the deserts of Tatooine.
"He will learn patience."
You spin around. There is no one else in the room. The creature says,
"He is not ready."
"Yoda!" you cry, staring at the strange little creature. "You are Yoda!" Obi-Wan Kenobi's voice suffuses the little house.
"Was I any better when you taught me?"
"He's too old,"
the creature, Yoda, replies.
"Too old to begin the training."
You move swiftly to the side of his bed and kneel, peering at the strange blue-green skin, wizened like a raisin,
white wisps of hair flying in all directions from his otherwise bald scalp. He is hideous. He is ridiculous. He is Yoda.
Yoda, please, you say. I've already learned so much.
And then you pause before saying,
I understand the story now. It was about Yoda.
The creature turns his luminous eyes upon you.
You were the frog, the cat, the chicken, and the king. I was each of the three brothers.
The first two brothers you were,
Yoda says, pointing a gnarled finger in your face.
I was, you say, and you let your head fall. But I won't be. I will be the youngest boy. I will trust you. I will listen to you. I will learn.
And then you add,
I'm not afraid.
Yoda's eyes darken. He rises up, taller and taller, until he seems to fill the room. Until it seems that he is the greatest, grandest, largest creature you have ever met.
You will be,
he intones, looking down at you, through you, and deep into you.
Oh, you will be.
Lesson Mew. The Force is not multiple choice. So, which are you, young Padawan? One of the older brothers or the youngest? I know what you'd like to say. We'd all like to say that we're the youngest brother. But are you really? Let's find out. Are you familiar with those teen magazines that have multiple choice tests? You answer a bunch of questions, and if you choose mostly A, you're this kind of person, and mostly B, you're that other kind. We're going to do one of those tests. One question, three options. You might want to meditate before we begin. Really? Okay, have you meditated? Then here we go. It's lunchtime in the school cafeteria. You exit the food line, gripping your tray of steaming sloppy joe. You look around. To your right, you see your friends. The table is full except for one chair next to your best friend. You know your best friend has been having a really rough day. Straight ahead of you, there's a new kid. A group of mean kids has sat down around him. They look like they're already starting to give the kid a hard time. To your left, there's someone in your class who sits alone every day. She would obviously like to sit with someone, but nobody gives her a chance. So, do you A, go sit beside your friend? He or she is your best friend and needs your support today. The other kids can wait. B, sit down with the new student. If the mean kids tease him, you'll stand up to them, or at least let the new kid know you're on his side. C, join the table with the loner. She's been suffering the longest, and it's time to help her out. Think about it. Which will it be? All right, ready for the answer? It's a trick question. Jedi do not act hypothetically. They act in real life. Next time you see A, B, or C going down, do something about it. For real. That is the way of the Jedi. Chapter 14.
You sit, cross-legged, before Yoda's little house. Your eyes are closed. You are listening. You are feeling. Yoda is near you. You can faintly perceive the heat that emanates from him. Yoda is holding up an object. This is like an exercise you did with Ben once, back when he was your teacher, back when he was alive.
A stick?
Yoda grunts angrily.
A rock?
Guessing you are. Guess not. Feel.
You try to still your mind. Quietly, oh so quietly, you hear something moving. Small, quick movements. Not going somewhere movements. More like
squirming. There is heat coming from Yoda. But there is more heat, just a little more heat, coming from his hand. "It's alive," you murmur.
"Mmm,"
Yoda says. You get excited.
"A frog!"
"No!"
Yoda barks. You open your eyes. It's a mouse.
"No!"
Yoda says again, shaking his frog-like head.
"Guess you do. Impatient you are. Trust the Force you do not."
He looks away from you.
800 years have I trained Jedi. The deepest commitment must a Jedi have. The most serious mind."
He grunts and puts down the mouse. It scurries away into the thick, wet greenery of Dagobah.
"You, a long time have I watched,"
he says.
"Always looking away you are, off to the horizon. Adventure. Excitement. Never your mind on where you are."
Yoda punctuates those words by gesturing with his walking stick at your chest.
"A Jedi looks not to other times, other places. To now a Jedi looks and feels."
You nod. You are trying to understand. Trying, but not succeeding.
"Again, your eyes you must close."
You do.
"What is around you? Every tree, rock, thing, living and not living, must you list."
You squint and try to remember your exact surroundings. Suddenly, Yoda's stick whacks you in the side of the head.
"Remember not,"
Yoda commands, as if he is reading your thoughts.
"Feel."
You are sprinting through the jungle, leaping over stones and running along wet logs, trying to sense the slick spots, the rotten spots, before you step on them. Yoda is clinging to your neck. He is small, but his judgment of you, his disappointment, hangs heavier than his little body.
"Focus,"
he says. You leap up onto a log that has fallen over a stream. As your foot lands on it, you relax. Inhale. You hear the hollow sound it makes. Feel its weight beneath you, its density. You take 2 long strides and then a short one. You hop over a pale spot and slide your feet the rest of the way till you jump down on the farther bank and keep running.
"Good,"
Yoda intones.
"Felt the wood you did. Knew what was good, what rotten."
There is a steep slope that leads down into a wet ravine. A bunch of vines hang from a nearby tree. You go to grab one and hesitate.
"Feel,"
Yoda whispers. You close your eyes and feel without touching. There is a strong vine among the bunch. A good hardy one, ready and happy to bear your weight and Yoda's. You open your eyes. It is obvious. It looks no different from the others, but it is different. You know it. You take it, swing out over the ravine, and drop lightly to the other side.
"Good, good."
You run and run and run. Your legs tire, but the Force is good. And as you relax into it, your legs keep moving, as if this is what they were meant to do. Indeed, you think it is. Your arms and shoulders ache from swinging and climbing and carrying Yoda. But you breathe deeply and then smile. This is what they were meant to do too. It is their function. The soreness is just telling you that they are working to their potential. It is not bad pain. It is merely the language of your body speaking. And you are, at last, listening. You have stopped. Yoda stands, like a wizened, withered stump, staring into the distance. You sit cross-legged, feeling your breath come in through your nose, down your throat, into your chest, and out again.
"A Jedi's strength flows from the Force,"
Yoda is saying.
But beware of the dark side. Anger, fear, aggression. The dark side of the Force are they. Easily they flow, quick to join you in a fight. But if once you start down the dark path, forever will it dominate your destiny. Consume you it will, as it did Obi-Wan's apprentice.
You lose track of your breathing. Vader? You ask. Yoda nods. You have another question. Yoda, is the dark side stronger?
No. No. Quicker, yes. Easier, yes. More seductive. Like a big cake of swamp cane. Eat it all you want to, and sweet will it taste. Full will you feel, and energetic. But fade the energy will, and sick you soon will be. Better to eat fruit, fish, good things. Not as sweet, but long will they last.
You furrow your brow. I know a cake when I see one. But what about the dark side? How do you tell the difference between the dark side and the Force?
Search your feelings, and know you will. Like the wood on the tree trunk. When you are calm, at peace, not angry, not grasping, you will know.
But tell me why. Suddenly, Yoda is impatient.
No, no, there is no why. There only is and is not. No more will I teach you today.
You don't know what you said that was so wrong. Disappointed, still hungry for knowledge, you stand. Stretch. And then you see it. Looming dark and sinister through the tangled branches of the jungle. It is a cave. Even from this distance, 100 meters or more, you can feel it. Like a sudden gust of freezing wind. What is that place? You ask. I feel cold. Death. Yoda looks up at you, and his eyes are shining.
That place, strong with the dark side it is. The domain of evil. In you must go.
What? What's in there? You can't take your eyes from its darkness. Like a negative space, a void among the vibrant, vivid greenery of the rest of the planet. Yoda's voice is quiet, but clear.
Only what you take with you.
You pick up your lightsaber.
Your weapons,
Yoda says.
You will not need them.
You pause. Look at Yoda. You look at the cave. You keep the lightsaber in your hand. The darkness is thick and smells musty and rotten. But not rich, not full of life breaking down and transforming into something new, like most of the rotting smells of Dagobah. This is a smell like death. Something moves behind you. You turn. A black snake, long and thick, curls around a root that protrudes from the earthen walls. It is speckled with white spots. Each one looks like a death's head. You shudder. You push deeper into the cave. Creepers hang in your path. The air is cold here. A rush of wind blows something sticky into your face. You claw it off. It's a spider web, teeming with tiny arachnids. You try not to panic, flicking them from your skin, your ears, your hair. Your heart is beating hard. Your breath is shallow. You are afraid. And angry. Angry at Yoda for sending you in here. For giving you all of these stupid tests and never being satisfied. For not recognizing how well you've done. How far you've come. Also, you realize, you are angry at yourself. Angry that you are so afraid. And then you hear something breathing in the darkness.
It sounds metallic. You step forward, again, once more, and then he emerges from the shadows. Darth Vader! Darth Vader is here! He has found you, followed you here, somehow. You grab your lightsaber and ignite the blue blade. His lightsaber rises too, a pulsating red, reflecting in his black helm and black synthetic eyes. The blades are, in the darkness, strangely complementary, as if somehow they belong together. Vader advances. Fear and hatred mingle in your heart. He raises his lightsaber. You raise yours sideways, and as his crashes down upon you, you catch it with your own, and your strength holds. You step back. He advances, swinging his blade. You parry, sidestep. He turns to you, lightsaber coming around fast, but too late. With a vicious strike, your lightsaber blade is already slicing through Darth Vader's neck. His head rolls to the cave wall. His body crumples. You stand astride it, heaving, victorious. He is dead. Dead at last! You turn your gaze on his head. His mask breaks asunder in a sudden explosion, revealing his lifeless face. But it is not his face. It is your face, staring back at you. Eyes wide, mouth open. Your face in Vader's helmet. You turn and run.
Lesson new. Patience plus compassion equals strength. Think of someone you do not like. Someone you know who's been mean to you in the past, or whom you're afraid of, or whom maybe you're not always very nice to. Think of everything you know about that person. Think of his parents, his family, his house, his schoolwork, his friends. Think of what he is good at, what he is bad at. Now, pretend you are him or her. Close your eyes and walk through the day in her shoes. You should imagine yourself with her joys and with her pains. Can you name those pains? You should try. Really, try. Understand that person as thoroughly as you can. This will give you patience and compassion the next time you encounter them, which is good. Patience and compassion combined make strength.
Chapter 15.
In the dark heart of the Empire's largest Star Destroyer, there is a dark room. In that dark room is a large dark egg. It is a meditation chamber. In that large dark egg is possibly the darkest soul in the galaxy.
Lord Vader,
Admiral Piet murmurs. He has hurried from the bridge, from where the destroyer is navigating a particularly nasty asteroid field. His hands are shaking, for lots of reasons. Slowly, the dark egg cracks open. Vader is sitting with his back to the Admiral. His helmet is off. Piet averts his eyes. Even the back of Vader's head is difficult to look at. Flower-white skin, scars and burns crisscrossing the surface. The helmet is lowered. The skin is sheathed in the shining alloy of Vader's black helm. He turns.
What is it?
Vader's voice inspires uncontrollable shivers of fear, no matter how many times one hears it. The Admiral, though, has a message even more terrifying. He swallows hard before saying,
The Emperor commands you to make contact with him.
Vader's reaction is swift.
Move the ship out of the asteroid field so that we have clear transmission.
Yes, my lord.
The Admiral scurries away. Vader steps from his meditation cell and strides to a small platform, the transmitter deck.
He steps onto it. He kneels. He bows his head. The sight of Vader bowing should strike fear in any heart, for it means there is one more powerful, more evil than he. And that one is come. A projection fills the room. From floor to ceiling, it depicts a figure in a black cloak, hooded like a Jedi's. Under the hood, barely visible, is a hideous face. Wrinkles deep and regular as a castle's moat run in concentric lines from temple to chin and under the sunken eyes. Those eyes are a rich yellow, with piercing black pupils. Vader sees none of this. His head is still bowed.
What is thy bidding, Master?
The Emperor's voice is deep, like Vader's, but it is raspy too. More of a croak than a voice.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Vader nods, not raising his head.
I have felt it.
The Emperor inhales, as if drawing breath through a reed in a swamp.
We have a new enemy. Luke Skywalker.
Vader's head does not move, but a new tension grips his hunched shoulders, his bent neck.
Yes, my master.
He could destroy us.
For a moment, Vader does not speak. When he does, his rich voice is slow and deliberate.
He is just a boy. Obi-Wan can no longer help him.
The Force is strong with him. The son of Skywalker must not become a Jedi.
Vader raises his head to his master. A new idea occurring to him, it seems.
If he could be turned, he would become a powerful ally.
Pause. The Emperor's gaze considers his most promising pupil, penetrating that dark helm, that black mask, through his apprentice's burnt and scarred skin, and down into his dark heart. There, in the center of evil, the Emperor detects something. He cannot tell what it is.
Yes,
he croaks at last.
Yes, he would be a great asset.
And then...
Can it be done?
Darth Vader bows his head again.
He will join us or die, my master.
Chapter 16. You are standing on your hands. Yoda is balancing on your feet. The blood has rushed to your face. Rivers of sweat are running down your arms and your neck, and taste salty in your mouth. The air is thick and wet around you.
Relax, you must,
Yoda murmurs.
Use the Force. Think you must not. Strain you must not. Breathe. Rooted you must be, like a tree.
There are two stones before you, each about the size of a grapefruit.
Now, the stone. Feel it.
You focus on the smaller of the two stones. Slowly, it begins to rise. Untouched by anything but your thoughts and the Force. You lift it, move it, until it rests on top of the other stone. You have returned to the fen where the X-Wing crashed. It has been sinking deeper and deeper into the muck each day. Your supplies are still stacked in messy piles on the bank. As you hold yourself upside down and focus on keeping one stone balanced on the other, R2-D2 starts beeping frantically.
Focus,
Yoda purrs. Still concentrating on the stones, you glance over at R2-D2. He's standing by the X-Wing. The ship is sliding rapidly into the swamp. At this rate, it will be gone within minutes.
Concentrate!
Yoda cries. Too late. You go toppling over, throwing the little Jedi to the ground. The stones fall. You jump to your feet and run to the edge of the swamp. You stare. Only a tip of a wing of the fighter is still visible. R2 continues beeping frantically. We'll never get it out now! Yoda appears beside you, dusting himself off from his fall.
So certain are you. Always with you, it cannot be done. Hear you nothing I say? Understand you nothing?
You shake your head, staring at your only means of getting off this fetid, stinking swamp planet as it disappears into the muck. Yoda gestures at the ship. You know what that gesture means. You look between him and the X-Wing. You shake your head. Master, moving stones is one thing. This is totally different.
No, not different. Difference is in your mind only. You must unlearn what you have learned.
You shake your head. Okay, I'll try.
No, try not. Do or do not. There is no try.
You take a deep breath. Focus on the ship. You reach out your hand and grip the ship with your mind.